Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
We continue to see that wet pattern across the central and eastern United States, relatively dry in much of the west, and that is reflected in the topsoil moisture numbers for the week ending July 13th.
On topsoil moisture condition ratings, Brad Rippey, meteorologist, USDA.
We saw a 1 point increase in U.S. topsoil moisture rated very short to short, going from 26 to 27%. That is mostly related to dryness in the western U.S. At the same time, topsoil moisture surplus steady at 10%. As it is very difficult to actually receive more moisture than the crops and the environment use this time of year as you move into the heart of summer and also evaporation, evapotranspiration reaching an absolute maximum as we move into July.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
A House Ag Subcommittee hearing on Wednesday focused on the growing pressure family farmers face, assessing affordable credit and managing financial risk. Session was part of a series examining farm finance and included testimony from rural bankers, ag lenders, and Montana producer John Wicks. Wicks, a fourth-generation farmer, emphasized the strain rising input cost and low commodity prices place on family farms. He said that while credit and risk management programs are essential, farmers also need more competitive markets and stronger farm safety net protections to stay viable. Suggestions from the hearing included increasing loan limits through the Farm Service Agency, streamlining debt restructuring processes, and ensuring programs meet the needs of diverse farm types. Ag lenders warned higher interest rates are compounding risk for borrowers, even as operational costs climb. Witnesses from AgWest Farm Credit and First National Bank in Sioux Falls urging Congress to invest in stronger lending tools that reflect today's economic realities. U.S. trade policy continues to shift rapidly with new tariffs and international negotiations making headlines. A major new deal with Indonesia will boost U.S. ag exports to that country to $4.5 billion. Well above recent averages. In return, Indonesia faces 19% duties but gains access to American energy and aircraft. Meanwhile, Mexico warning of possible retaliation against U.S. ag goods if new tomato tariffs aren't reversed before August. President Sheinbaum said she remains hopeful a resolution can be reached. Brazil's beef industry also reconsidering exports to the U.S. following the imposition of 50% tariffs. Tariff threats also loom over Canada, the EU, and other key partners. Duties as high as 35% set to activate August 1st unless deals are struck. Talks with China are progressing ahead of a separate August 12th deadline, while negotiations with India, Japan, and South Korea remain stuck. Officials say enforcement will remain strict unless better market access and reciprocity is secured. With global ag trade in flux, producers and exporters alike bracing for what could be a volatile second half of the year. A new analysis from FarmDoc Daily shows that while financial leverage can improve farm profitability, it also sharply increases risk, especially in years with low net farm income. Using FinBin data from 2007 to 2024, the study compared performance of crop farms with debt-to-asset ratios above and below 0.4. On average, high debt farms posted stronger retained earnings during good years, largely due to larger scale and higher reinvestment. But their earnings and net worth fluctuated far more. In 2024, a low-income year, high-debt farms saw average returns on equity of just 0.9%. That's compared to 1.6% for low-debt farms. For the most highly leveraged farms, those above 0.6, returns dipped to negative 3.8%. So with interest rates rising above 8% since 2023, many farms may need to reconsider their debt levels. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I'm Terry Hensley, Assistant Agency Director of the Texas A&M Veterinary Medical Diagnostic Laboratory, or TVMDL. I have the privilege of serving at one of our nation's busiest veterinary diagnostic laboratories, running almost 1 million tests annually. Most of our caseload comes from within Texas, but we also receive samples from all 50 states and internationally. Animal diseases don't respect geographic boundaries. Therefore, it's imperative that our veterinary diagnostic laboratories in all 50 states have the same capabilities to detect diseases quickly and accurately to limit their spread and mitigate the impact on animal agriculture. The NALAN has built a responsive, effective partnership of state and federal laboratories that leverages resources and talent across the nation. The NALAN program office works tirelessly to strengthen relationships with every member laboratory so we can respond as a network to the ever-increasing disease incursions threatening our nation's animal agriculture industries. It's crucial that the NALAN be fortified and enabled to provide the critical diagnostic testing needed during animal disease outbreaks. Ensuring NALAN has sufficient funding will aid in addressing our nation's need for a safe, stable, and nutritious food supply. We want to thank Congress for the increased funding for NALAN in the reconciliation bill and for Congressman Ronnie Jackson for helping lead those efforts. TVMDL was one of the original NALAN core laboratories. Texas has features that increase its risk for the introduction of animal disease threats, including a 1,248-mile-long border with Mexico and multiple international land, sea, and airports. Texas imports 1 million cattle annually from Mexico and 2.5 million cattle from other U.S. states. In addition to livestock, Texas has an abundance of feral, wild, and farmed wildlife species. Three major migratory flyways cross the state. The interface between domestic and wildlife species poses a tremendous challenge for disease surveillance, detection, and eradication. TVMDL's work protects Texas' $24 billion animal agriculture industries while enhancing the response preparedness of the NALAN. An example of synergy occurred in March of 2024 when many dairies in the Texas Panhandle reported a mysterious illness in lactating cows. The cows showed various signs of illness, but most striking was the dramatic decrease in milk production. Dairy veterinarians sent samples to TVMDL as well as our fellow NALAN labs at Cornell University and Iowa State University. For several weeks, our laboratories ran every test that might provide an explanation, but there were no definitive answers. When dairies reported large numbers of dead birds and cats, the possibility of a connection between highly pathogenic avian influenza and sick cattle was suggested. The NALAN laboratories at Texas A&M, Cornell, and Iowa State collaborated using shared samples from sick cows and demonstrated the presence of H5N1 virus in mammary tissue and milk. These results were reported to the NALAN and confirmed by the National Veterinary Services laboratories. On Monday, March 25, 2024, USDA made the unprecedented announcement of an outbreak of highly pathogenic avian influenza in U.S. dairy cattle. Texas may soon be ground zero for another incursion if the deadly New World screwworm fly invades our state from Mexico. While we hope this pest can be contained south of the border, hope, as they say, is not a strategy.
And this is Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
My name's Clint Hood, and yes, I'm a senior vice president with Synovus Bank down in Dublin, Georgia.
Testimony at a recent House Ag Subcommittee hearing on better credit access for farmers.
I've worked in agricultural finance for over 37 years for banks of all sizes. Prior to banking, I farmed with my father in East Central Georgia on a very diverse row crop and livestock family farm. My wife and I now live on our farm in Dublin, and I've enjoyed instilling farm values in our children and our growing number of grandchildren. I'm a proud Georgia Bulldog, go Dogs, and I've always been lucky, felt lucky, to be around agriculture my entire life. I believe my story is somewhat similar to other agricultural bankers. I have passion for agriculture that extends well beyond the bank. All my career, I've been involved with many agricultural organizations, including Georgia Farm Bureau, Georgia Agribusiness Council, Georgia FFA Foundation, and the Georgia Cattlemen Association. My favorite organization of those is the FFA, and this is the reason. The FFA strives to teach kids values and disciplines of agriculture through its youth programs. As an agriculture banker, I believe it's vital that we're working closely with our agriculture producers and agriculture groups. I appreciate this opportunity to present the views of agricultural banking at this hearing. Banks continue to be one of the first places that farmers and ranchers look for when they're trying to find agricultural loans, and over 80% of the banks in the United States have agriculture in their portfolio. Bankers finance all types of agriculture in every part of the country. Agricultural lending is a noble, but it's a tough profession. We work with our customers to improve their businesses, their livelihoods, both in the long and the short term. The current state of the agricultural economy is not healthy right now. However, the Emergency Commodity Assistance Program payments, better known as ECAP, have been very helpful, not only to the farmers and ranchers, but to the ag bankers as well. And we thank Congress and the USDA for getting those payments out quickly. But ECAP payments are a short-term solution to a long-term problem. All the farmers in my area continue to struggle financially due to low commodity prices and high input costs. I recently had to have a discussion with a farmer who does not borrow any working capital. He and his brother needed to cash out a long-term CD, a CD that had been in their family for years, but they had to cash it out in order to pay their shortfall in their operating cost because their margins continue to be upside down. Farmers are trying to find solutions to keep their operations going as working capital lines dry up and without taking any unnecessary extra debt. Congress took the first steps to provide new economic relief to our farmers and ranchers by increasing reference prices for commodities and by increasing the cost share for crop insurance in the recent tax legislation. Our farmers and ranchers have badly needed those provisions to be modernized to reflect where agriculture is now, not where it was 12 to 15 years ago. I still believe we need a long-term farm bill to help our rural communities. To me, the farm bill is really a food bill, as it supports the financial stability of our nation's food producers, but it also guarantees the consumers access to that food. Beyond the farm bill, bankers continue to work on additional solutions to help our customers during these tough times.
Ag lender from Georgia, Clint Hood. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
To those of you who are lenders here with us today.
At a House Ag Subcommittee hearing on Wednesday, Representative Austin Scott from Georgia.
We all know that the process of approving a loan is not simple. What are some of the lending programs at the Farm Service Agency you're able to utilize to ensure that you're making a sound financial decision when reviewing a loan application? Additionally, what are some of the changes and improvements we can look at making as we continue our work to finish the Farm Bill? And I would specifically like to hear your opinion on the time that it takes to get the approval.
Okay. At First National Bank, we've teamed up with FSA on many, many loans. I know in my oral testimony I said that we use FSA for customers that maybe don't qualify for conventional financing and beginning farmers. But I would tell you that has really expanded. Our partnership with them has really expanded in the last couple of years, where some of our more sophisticated younger borrowers are utilizing joint financing, where they'll finance a portion, 45%, we'll finance 50, and they only have to put 10% down. It's a very great way for a young producer to be able to compete and enter the market. So those farm ownership, joint loans. We utilize the guarantee program at First National Bank, but probably not as heavily as what a smaller, more rural bank would because of their lending limits versus ours, but we do use guaranteed loans. We're a preferred lender with FSA, so our loan approvals, they come fairly reasonable, but I know we've had some of our banks through ICBA that are that aren't preferred lenders, and they're saying timing is 30 or 60 or 90 days, which that doesn't really cut it in today's just with how fast things are moving.
I would echo that as well. So AgWest is a preferred lender also when we're getting guarantees, so that is very helpful. But oftentimes, even though we go through a rigorous program ahead of time to look at those credits and make sure that they're packaged well, it can still take quite a long time for them to come back from FSA. So making that more streamlined, particularly for preferred lenders, as well as the increase to the loan limits that are out there for those. When you send a loan to FSA to get a guarantee, or even in the direct lending, and it's close to the top of the lending limits, then that puts up some red flags and things that they have to look at a little bit longer. So both of those, making it just easier for our customers to get access more quickly, are very important.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a lot to add to that. My bank handles a very mature ag portfolio, and we don't have the staff right now to do the new farmer, the young farmer programs like I would like to. As we grow our portfolio, I'm going to add some more staff. For me personally, I think it's an extremely valuable tool that farmers, bankers can use to help farmers, not just farmers that are farming with their parents or with their family, but also farmers that the bug just hit them, that they want to get out on the farm and take the leap. It's hard to do when you don't have the resources. And even when you compare it to what you go to the equipment place to buy this several hundred thousand dollar equipment, it's monumental the task that it takes to be able to finance all that. So, but I love the first-time farmer programs. We just don't utilize them right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Yeah, Iowa State Veterinary Diagnostic Lab is the only full-service and fully accredited veterinary diagnostic lab in our state.
Dr. Roger Main, director of the Iowa State Veterinary Diagnostic Lab, testifying before a House Ag Subcommittee.
Our team at the ISU VDL proudly serves as an active contributor to the USDA's National Animal Health Lab Network. The NALM delivers a national standard of best-in-class veterinary diagnostic technologies, testing capabilities, and coordination of information among federal, state, and private sector veterinarians from across the country who are responsible for surveilling and responding to animal health emergencies of high consequence to U.S. animal agriculture. As you know, agriculture is critically important to the state of Iowa and its people, past, present, and future. Iowa is the national leader in animal agriculture, both in production and processing, and a substantive exporter of value-added food products. This is why the ISUVDL has a long history of being front and center in diagnosing and supporting responses of emerging diseases of high consequence to Iowa and U.S. animal agriculture. As Randy mentioned, ISUVDL's team of 30 faculty and 155 technical staff process greater than 125 case submissions, conducting more than 1.7 million assays annually. ISUVDL carries amongst the largest food animal-centered caseloads in our country, with submissions of livestock and poultry origin representing greater than 90% of the cases received. ISUVDL's principal clientele are the practicing veterinarians, who are working directly in the support of the veterinary health care needs of U.S. farmers and ranchers on a daily basis. This connectivity to the boots on the ground of Iowa and U.S. animal agriculture positions our laboratory very well in our role as a Level 1 lab in the National Animal Health Lab Network. Our work includes receiving and supporting endemic, emerging, and foreign animal disease case investigations, surveillance, and supporting response efforts in support of the NALM's mission to protect U.S. animal health, public health, and the nation's food supply. In my view, the NALM is an exemplary example of a highly functional and effective partnership amongst federal, state, university, and industry partners. The efficiencies of the federal funds invested in the NALM are greatly amplified through the leveraging of the substantive laboratory infrastructure, subject matter expertise, quality-assured laboratory testing capabilities, research scientists, and the direct connectivity to the front lines of U.S. animal agriculture that exists at our university and state diagnostic labs across the country. The federal support provided through the NALM is a cornerstone for enhancing national preparedness to effectively monitor and respond to the ever-increasing risk and realities of emerging disease of high importance to both animal and human health. ISUBDL's role in working in partnership with our USDA colleagues, practicing veterinarians, peer laboratories, and the state and federal animal health officials from across the country in support of the detection and response to the high path avian influenza outbreak impacting U.S. poultry flocks and dairy herds in the past 2 years is simply the most recent example of the ISUBDL and USDA NOLM partners from across the country stepping up in a time of need. Such capabilities are only made possible through the federal investment in this vital network. In summary, I believe the federal investments in the NOLM represent a true win-win-win. Win for U.S. animal health, public health, for U.S. agriculture more broadly, and for enhancing the security, safety, and affordability of our nation's food supply. I thank the members of this committee and leaders within USDA APHIS, both present and past, for your leadership, vision, and steadfast support for establishing and continuing to advance the capabilities and reach of the NOLM across our country. Your vision and support have resulted in the development of a highly trusted and capable network, veterinary network of veterinary diagnostic labs that are truly world-class. In my opinion, the NOLM is a crown jewel within USDA APHIS veterinary services that is uniquely American and unmatched the world around.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
My name is John Wicks, and I'm a fourth-generation farmer in Montana.
Wicks testifying in front of a House Ag subcommittee on financing farm operations, the importance of credit and risk management.
I grew up on a dry land farm and have been running our family farm since 2007. I was attending college when my father passed, and I returned to the farm where I primarily raised lentils, chickpeas, wheat, durum, rye, and barley. Farming is a way of life, an important part of my identity. But it's also a business which demands significant investment in land, equipment, and inputs to succeed. It also comes with inescapable risks. That's why I need access to affordable and reliable credit and risk management tools to build and sustain successful farm business. I will focus much of my testimony today on how important USDA FSA loan programs have been for my farm. While FSA lending is a small percentage of the overall agricultural lending portfolio, it's been critical for me and many others. My first experience with FSA loan programs was when I was 14 years old. I received a $5,000 youth loan to purchase cattle, and I ran those cattle alongside my dad's herd for 4 years. The proceeds helped fund my college education. Many beginning farmers lack equity, credit history, and can have difficulty accessing capital. USDA loan programs are designed to provide a pathway for beginning farmers to access credit. And this made a big difference for my farm. When I was starting out, our farm's combine suffered a major breakdown during harvest. Our bank wasn't able to provide another line of credit, but through FSA, I quickly purchased a replacement combine, which saved our harvest and helped me build equity in an operation that's still paying dividends today. FSA loan programs came in handy once again when I started growing pulse crops like lentils and chickpeas, which are more delicate to handle than grain crops. To make handling pulses feasible, I needed to purchase hopper bottom bins, which I bought using FSA Farm Storage Facility Loan. FSA loans also helped us transition the farm to the next generation. An FSA farm ownership loan helped me take over land and the generational debt that was tied to it through a relatively safe loan option. I asked the committee to make important updates and improvements to FSA loan programs this year, including adjusting loan limits to reflect current economic environment, making it more feasible for farmers to restructure debt when needed, and ensuring those programs meet the unique needs of all types of producers. My family is also a customer of AgWest Farm Credit. We remain grateful for the time that AgWest helped us through a period of major financial stress. They understood the value of what we were trying to accomplish on our farm and more accurately evaluated our risk compared to other lenders we consulted. While access to affordable and reliable credit and well-functioning risk management tools are important for family farmers, we must have fair and competitive markets and a robust farm safety net. Farm bankruptcies are on the rise. Recent changes to improve the farm safety net may help alleviate some challenges with persistently high input costs and low commodity prices, but farmers will face major economic stress as long as corporate monopolies in agriculture remain unchecked the way they are today. Thankfully, lawmakers can take action to address these challenges. For example, you can strengthen the connection between the USDA and our chief federal federal competition and antitrust law enforcers, the DOJ and the FTC, by passing the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act. We can ensure that recently finalized Packers and Stockyard Act rules are retained and forcefully implemented. You can reestablish country of origin labeling for beef so consumers know where their food is really coming from and so farmers and ranchers are paid fairly.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Among the commodities covered in USDA's monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, yet not emphasized, is the oilseed crop known as rapeseed. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski explains why that crop was featured in the July WASD.
Mainly because we wanted to focus on the EU and our rapeseed production forecast for the EU.
As the European Union is both a competitor to U.S. soybeans, soybean oil, and canola in the global oilseed market, as well as a potential export market for our country's beans and bean oil.
We're looking at a fairly strong rebound in rapeseed production in the EU. Last year, the crop was cut short a bit due to weather concerns, especially. This year, we're seeing generally more favorable outlook for rapeseed production.
With a forecasted 2.6 million metric ton increase in the EU behind year-over-year production gains in several nations. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.